Welcome back, my friend. It is ADHD Powerful Possibilities, and I am your host and friend, ADHD Coach Catherine. It is wonderful to be back with you after the cold hit our entire household, and this time last week I could not talk, so I'm really happy to be back. This week we are exploring fresh information for us about ADHD and perimenopause and menopause. It's the end of a series of four podcasts looking at the kind of journey from childhood through puberty, through teens, through pregnancy and childbirth into perimenopause. And this week I'm also sharing my very first guest episode with the wonderful Dr. Kathleen Nadeau, who wrote Still Distracted After All These Years. And if you buy any book about ADHD, that is the one that I would recommend for men and women, for people of any ages. Still Distracted After All These Years is a really fantastic book that explores the impact of ADHD as we get older. And I thought it would be lovely to round off this little series with an interview with somebody who I have looked up to for years and who was at the forefront of research on the impact of ADHD and women at a time when it wasn't even widely accepted that girls and women could have ADHD. So this week we're going to focus on perimenopause and menopause, and I will include a link to the last episode I did about menopause because I think it's something that bears repeating. There's a lot of talk about HRT and about medication, but not all of us can take HRT and not all of us are able to access medication, and supplies of both have been unpredictable. I think it's worth exploring what other aspects can we control or influence in our lives that will improve how we feel during menopause and perimenopause, but also acknowledging that scientists are doing research now that shows the impact on our brain of our changing hormonal landscape. And I was shocked how much dopamine production disappears as our estrogen declines. And there's some research showing that if you don't introduce HRT or exogenous hormones within a year of the menopause actually starting, which is 1 year after your last period, within 2 or 3 years, up to half of your estrogen production cells, which affect your dopamine, have gone. They're not coming back on. So even if you start HRT later, it's not going to be the same. We often think of perimenopause as something that happens in your 40s, but it can start to rear its head in the 30s, which is why a lot of women in their 30s are recognising that they're maybe not coping with day-to-day life in the same way as they were. They might notice that their periods are more unpredictable, they're maybe a bit heavier, and a lot of us put things like that down to stress because you're likely to be working, you may have other responsibilities, you may have a family to care for, and it's easy to shrug your shoulders and say, oh, I'm getting older. And one of the main reasons that I've spent so long focusing on the journey of women with ADHD is because we do have the additional challenge of fluctuating hormones, which our brothers with ADHD do not have to deal with. And it makes life extra challenging for us, let's be honest, because we know now that estrogen production is directly connected to dopamine. And that's why many of us find that in that week or two before our period, our medication just doesn't work so well. It's not that the medication doesn't work so well. Our need for extra dopamine, our need for extra medication increases because we have lower dopamine. And there are recent studies that I will include links to in the show notes that confirm that increasing our medication temporarily in the luteal phase can improve our day-to-day lives, our experience of managing our executive functions, our disability, because ADHD is a disability for most people, at least some of the time. And when you go into menopause, the question is, what do we do? Do we increase our medication consistently? Do we try and use hormone replacement therapy? And What if we can't access one or the other of those? There are conflicting studies showing HRT either benefiting long-term brain health, avoiding dementia and risks like that. And then there are a couple of other studies which appear to show the opposite and suggest that taking HRT can make your risk of dementia rise. This isn't that kind of podcast. We're only going to talk about HRT and ADHD, but that's a conversation you need to have with your doctor, with a qualified medical professional, and I would be very careful to check who you're talking to when you are assessing the risk and benefit of HRT, just as you would with the risks and benefits of ADHD medication. The other thing to bear in mind is that with hormone replacement therapy, unless you have had a hysterectomy, you will still have your womb, your uterus and ovaries. And there's a good reason to keep your ovaries, because they do appear to have a protective, beneficial effect even past menopause. But if you have your uterus and ovaries, you will need to take progesterone as well as estrogen. And that balance can take some time to get right, and you might need a different kind of progesterone. Bear in mind, it's not a simple take the prescription and off you go into the sunset. You might need to make adjustments as you go along. And the different kinds of HRT, whether that's a gel, patch, a tablet, these can also have an effect on how you're absorbing it, what the side effects are, and whether it suits you or not. But at the moment, there isn't any research I could find directly looking at the impact of hormone replacement therapy on ADHD medication. And I did spend quite a bit of time looking. It's very difficult to get funding for that type of very specific research, and it can take time. Whatever you decide to do, the most important thing is to make sure you're monitoring and recording how you feel, what the side effects are. You've got somebody keeping an eye on your blood pressure and your overall health. Because I do know that anecdotally, lots of women with ADHD who try hormone replacement therapy report, in to begin with, until things are settled down, they can have more experience of mood swings. And that tracks for me because of the sensitivity that we seem to have towards average levels of hormones during a regular cycle. One of the reasons I mentioned Dr. Nadeau at the start is because her book, Still Distracted After All These Years, includes an acronym, MENS, which I have decided is going to be the cornerstone of my life going forward, but also includes things that are beneficial for us when we're going through perimenopause and menopause. The simple interventions are not the easy ones. It may feel too simple to say something like improving your sleep can help your experience of menopause, but that's because it's not easy. And up front, I'm going to say these things are simple, but they're not always easy or straightforward. And some of that is down to the physical side effects of perimenopause and ADHD, and some of that is down to our unique circumstances and privilege, or lack of privilege. The elements of MENS which are relevant for us here are things like diet, and particularly looking at protein and omega-3 fatty acids. And we know that the right amount of omega-3 can help with cognition, with your thinking, as well as your emotional regulation. But we also know that as we get older, as we're busy, we tend to drop off a little bit on the focus on making sure we get plenty of fruit, vegetables, protein, and a more balanced diet. So it doesn't need to be extreme, but focusing on that type of basic whole food diet, when possible, can make a real difference to how you experience menopause. And this is particularly important in the context of privilege, because there are ways to make that easier, and there are ways to make that cheaper. The ways to make it convenient are not always the most cheap or easy to access. And so your unique circumstance and constellation of factors will come into how you approach things like changing your diet. But I would say that it is the most impactful thing that you can do apart from the next one, which is exercise. Yes, again, exercise. In perimenopause and menopause, it's different. We're not aiming for extremely intense aerobic exercise. We're not aiming for the same type of program. It's more an emphasis on building up your muscles, because that will counteract both the perceived decline in your metabolism. It also means you're reducing your risk of osteoporosis. And the more muscle you have, the generally better your body works. So in perimenopause and menopause, it would be wise to move away from focusing on cardio on its own, making sure that you have at least 2 to 3 sessions of weight-bearing resistance exercise every week. And I will include links to 2 coaches I know online in the UK and 1 in the States who are particularly relevant in this area. They are just people I know who I respect. There's nothing beyond it. This isn't Diary of a CEO. And the reason you want to include some aerobic exercise is because it's very good for your brain, for your executive functions. So while resistance exercise is magnificent for your body and for your long-term health, the aerobic exercise helps your brain to stay healthy and active, and combining both of them is wonderful. There was a controversy this week with someone taking issue on one of these elastic band bungee type of exercise classes and berating women for doing anything rather than taking action in the gym. Personally, I think it looks wonderful, because the most important thing about exercise is what it does for your mood. And anyone who's gone through perimenopause and menopause will tell you, your mood will be volatile. It's almost like you're going through puberty at the other end. And of course, the other thing that changes as we go through puberty is our ability to sleep. We might have been children who resisted sleep and then sleep all the time. In perimenopause and menopause, our sleep changes again. Our need for sleep may decrease slightly, but our ability to get a good sleep changes radically. Now, for me, this is the hardest one personally, because my ADHD brain wakes up about 4 in the morning. And if my sleep is disturbed, for instance, if I'm too hot and I'm very uncomfortable, if my brain wakes up at that point, then it's very difficult for me to get back to sleep. I'm just going to get up and start work. If that's you, we need to think about moving bedtime further back. And sleep is so important for your mental health, for your physical brain health, the way that our brains are cleaned at night. I will include links to some wonderful studies I've been looking at about how important it is to get that sleep for your long-term brain health. But also emotionally, we need to feel rested. We need to feel recovered. And I think the hardest thing for lots of people in perimenopause and menopause is that exactly the moment you need more sleep and more rest, your body decides, nope, we're going to wake up in a hot sweat. We are going to have leg cramps. We are going to be constantly aching in your joints, is connected to your menopause and the lack of estrogen as well. And obviously the things that we can do about that are limited. Medication in this instance doesn't really help, because it just makes you unconscious. The physiological process of sleep isn't the one that you experience when you're taking sleeping tablets. As far as possible, we want to front load success with sleep, and that includes making sure we're away from electronics, making sure that we go to bed at the same time, crucially get up at the same time every day, and ideally see daylight as quickly as possible. For me, that's a 7 a.m. start every day of the week with, when it's not pouring rain, a coffee outside with my dogs. And that does seem to help quite a lot. But the next step for me is making sure that I am getting to bed early enough. And I'm actually trialling one of these phone safes where you lock your phone away so you can't touch it. Because for me, it's not emotionally I'm connected to it, but it's a habit. The picking up, the scrolling is a habit. So I'm changing that. I will let you know how that goes. But see what works for you. And identify, if you can, where are the things that are getting between you and sleep? Because I feel like that is the foundation for everything else that we're trying to do. And of course, a bit of mindfulness, a bit of presence, a bit of being mindful in the present moment, moving mindfulness, these are all very helpful because they reduce our levels of stress. Our cortisol response goes down. And again, we experience higher levels of stress, physical stress, during perimenopause and menopause, which has a significant health impact and can mess up your sleep. So it's almost like this wonderful wheel of things that can go wrong, but also things that are potentially within our power to make changes in, one element at a time. And I wanted to talk a little bit today about therapy and coaching during perimenopause and menopause if you have ADHD. CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy, has got a very negative reputation at the moment among many people in the ADHD and autism community. I can understand why, because there are some elements of it which are not particularly friendly to our way of seeing the world. And the basis is what you think influences your behaviour. And they're asking us to change our thoughts, to change our behaviour. For many people with autism and ADHD, we feel things in our bodies and then we experience a thought. And the emotion and the sensation comes before the thought. And then asking us to change our thinking or thought, either it doesn't connect, it doesn't work for us, or it feels like it's an invalidation of what we're experiencing. So that is one of the reasons why some people find CBT to be unhelpful. However, I would say that sensitive and experienced CBT practitioner with enough information about ADHD, perhaps they also have ADHD or autism, can offer a really well-structured plan for dealing with the practical implications of ADHD. And Dr. Susan Young, who I've mentioned before, has written a lot about how to use CBT practically and sensitively for people with ADHD. But you might want to explore something like DBT, which is an offshoot of CBT, or even acceptance and commitment therapy, which is, again, a different form of therapy. But how are those related to coaching? So ADHD coaching is very much focused on making positive changes. And I don't mean positive as in the smiley hearts and flowers type of toxic positivity. In the practical sense, it's about moving forward. And it operates from a position of all things being well. And although it might not feel like it, perimenopause and menopause are normal stages of life where we're experiencing problems that could be supported by changes that we maybe struggle to make on our own. And ADHD coaching can help you to make those changes, but in a way that works for you and is very personalised. Therapy would be looking at something like your limiting beliefs and your negative thought patterns, and there are elements of that within ADHD coaching because we do have to recognize when they pop up. And one of my jobs is to catch that story, that belief for you. I don't change it. That's the job of yourself and therapy. With ADHD coaching, we have an element of that where it's impacting things like managing your routine about going to bed. Is there something getting in your way of going to bed on time? If it's a therapeutic issue, then we pass that back to a therapist or counsellor. But if it's a simple one where we can have a look at it, identify what's in your way, and then come up with a more joyful possible alternative, that's a coaching process. And I do think there's a great value in having a partner in an ADHD coach because it's an equal relationship. I am somebody who studied it a lot, but I'm just a human being, and ethical guidelines and boundaries aside, I'm a partner, not a leader. The benefits of ADHD coaching and that partnership is that you have a companion while you go through these changes, and they can allow you to reflect on what's happening And you will have insights that you maybe don't have time for in day-to-day life. It's one of our jobs is to give you that space and time to identify things that your brain is recognising, but you don't have the opportunity to ponder and to adjust. And of course, another benefit of having a coaching partner is we can support you to put self-compassion and those sort of practical self-care practices in place. And it's difficult without a partner who gives you that time and space and who gives you that focus and attention, that unquestioning acceptance and support to process a lot of the emotional changes. And it allows you to build up the self-compassion because somebody else is going to model that compassion for you. And then you will start to recognize it when you're using those words and those ideas with yourself. And that is incredibly powerful because very often by the time you're in perimenopause and menopause, you are the person who's doing that for other people. There may not be much space for it with others. If you have friends who are wonderful and accepting, they're likely to be just as busy as you are the thinly spread jam in the middle of the sandwich. And a coach allows you to have and hold that space. At the same time, if things are going well, it doesn't feel like you need to drag something up to be fixed because coaching assumes that you are already whole and capable and creative and resourceful. And our job is to hold that mirror up and reflect all the good, amazing stuff that we see back so you can identify it too. Building in self-compassion does take practice, but it is so powerful when it comes to accepting and moving through this next stage of life. I used the phrase earlier today, embracing your crone energy. There's a lot of talk about main character energy, but if you've ever heard of the mother, maiden, crone idea of the stages of womanhood, when you enter menopause, you are officially in your crone era. But there's a freedom and a power there, which is so different from any other stage in life. And to allow yourself to embrace that gently with compassion as you transition from the mother into the crone can be a challenge. And that's a good reason to have either a social support network, friends who are at the same point, or someone like a thinking partner, a coach, a counsellor, or someone who can accompany you and allow you to decide what that looks like for you. But when do you look for professional help? Personally, I think you need to make friends with your GP. If you have a gynecologist in the States, make sure you have someone who acknowledges the reality of the challenges of menopause and that these are avoidable for lots of women, who doesn't just tell you to go away and lose weight. The same in the UK. If your GP just tells you to go away and go on a diet and doesn't check your thyroid, your iron levels, your blood pressure, these things, find someone who does. And I'm aware that in the context of the health service in the UK, that is not easy. I'm not bashing doctors. They're all facing a very difficult time. But you don't have to suffer. And if your mood is persistently low, if you're feeling constantly anxious, if it's anxiety that's waking you up at night rather than your regular busy ADHD brain, that is a very good point to go and speak with your doctor. Many people have told me that HRT resolved that anxiety for them, but it may be that you need to look at something else. And that's why it's great to have a checkup, an MOT if you like. And if you're looking for support around exercise, around nutrition, any of these things, find people who really know what it's like. Again, I'll include links below to a few professionals that I trust and respect. And remember that you are the only person who's going to experience your constellation of ADHD and menopause symptoms. So if other people have horror stories, it's awful, but you don't necessarily have to go through that. And if you are having a really difficult time and things like diet and sleep and nutrition and exercise are beyond you because of your ADHD, get that treated first. Get that support first, because very often in the same way as antidepressants allow a person who's experiencing depression to engage and be supported with therapy, sometimes we need the ADHD medication first so we can make the lifestyle changes that are essential. And then it becomes this wonderful circle of ever improving health and well-being. And so although this was a very short episode today, I want to flag up the other menopause episode. And thank you again for listening. We're moving on to Pastures New and looking at the executive functions more globally. So things that will affect your day-to-day life at home and in work. And those will begin in April after the guest episode with Dr. Kathleen Nadeau. So thank you again for listening. I have put together some resources for you, which you can access through a link in the show notes. You can also find it through my website. I will try to remember to include it in any posts that I make. And if you want to know more about ADHD and coaching, you can always visit my website, which is lightbulbadhd.com. Thank you again for being with me today. I hope that this has given you some hope that you can make changes that will make a difference to how you feel every day. I look forward to seeing you again very soon. Please get in touch if you have any questions about today's show, ADHD, or if you've got ideas for what you want me to talk about in future. I look forward to being with you next week. And in the meantime, until we meet again, take care.